meeting with his Iranian counterpart in Moscow, the Russian foreign minister stresses that the world is waiting for Washington to return to the JCPOA. China and Brazil strike a deal to use their national currencies in bilateral trade transactions, ditching the US dollar as an intermediary. Also ahead, a new study shows about half of British workers are at risk of burnout due to emotional distress caused by the country's cost of living crisis. World News, we're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us.
Our top story this hour, Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian has held a meeting with his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov in Moscow. The two sides discussed various issues of bilateral relations and exchanged views on regional and international affairs. Maria Kurtanova has more.
Russia and Iran are in the final stage of finalizing a draft agreement on comprehensive partnership between the countries.
I am very grateful that the draft of comprehensive agreement on strategic partnership between our countries has been reviewed and finalized in Russia. We are now reviewing it again as well. I very much hope that within the next month, the legal departments of the foreign ministries of our two countries will finalize this draft.
The document is of strategic importance of solid, balanced new realities of bilateral cooperation between Moscow and Tehran. The treaty outlines the main guidelines for further building of the entire complex of Russian-Iranian relations for the coming decades. Among them is that Iran and Russia both agree that the JCPOA has no alternatives and needs to be implemented as soon as possible.
We talked about the situation around the JCPOA on the Iranian nuclear program. We have a common understanding that there is no alternative to this international agreement, which was written down in the unanimously adopted UN Security Council Resolution 2231. We are in favor of the early resumption of the full implementation of this resolution and oppose actions that prevent this.
Lavrov said that the U.S. needs to lift sanctions against Iran and return to its obligations under JCPOA. The minister added that the West also seeks to neutralize China along with Russia.
Therefore, Russia, Iran, China, and many other countries will categorically oppose attempts to establish Western hegemony forever and ever, as Washington and its henchmen are trying to do.
Lavrov noted that Russia respects Iran's interests in a peaceful settlement of the Ukrainian conflict. Amir Abdullahian, for his part, pointed out that Western supplies of various weapons to Kyiv complicate the Ukraine conflict, which he said should only be settled via political means. Meanwhile, Russian-Iranian cooperation in the military technical sphere is carried out in accordance with Russia's international obligations. The parties have found an approach in all areas when it is possible to concentrate on coinciding interests and systematically build up economic cooperation as well.
Russia has become the largest investor in Iran over the past fiscal year. Russia accounted for two-thirds of the total foreign direct investments in the Islamic Republic. The volume of Moscow's investments in Iran has reached $2.76 billion. Marina Kartonova, Moscow.
Syria has reaffirmed its inalienable right to take back control of the occupied Golan Heights from Israel. Addressing a meeting of the UN Human Rights Council, the Syrian representative urged all countries not to recognize any steps taken by Israel to perpetuate its occupation of the Golan. Haider Ali Ahmed described the construction of settlements by Israel in the occupied Golan Heights as a war crime. He added that the move is a flagrant violation of Syrians' human rights. Israel's settlement construction activities in the Golan have increased since 2021, when the regime unveiled a plan to double the number of settlers there over a period of 5 years. Israel has carried out another missile strike on Syria, this time targeting positions in the vicinity of the country's capital city of Damascus. According to a Syrian military source, the early Thursday attack was carried out from the direction of the occupied Golan Heights. The source added that the Israeli strike left two Syrian soldiers injured while causing some material damage. Syrian air defenses intercepted Israeli missiles and shot down some of them. Israel carries out frequent missile attacks on targets in Syria. Damascus has repeatedly complained to the UN Security Council, urging serious action against Tel Aviv's crimes. The calls have, however, fallen on deaf ears. Syria has vowed a crushing response to such acts of aggression in due time. Elsewhere, an Israeli court has sentenced Palestinian prisoner Khalil Awada to 16 months in jail, despite an earlier promise to release him after a lengthy hunger strike. The court accused him of taking a mobile phone into the prison when he was on hunger strike. Awada observed 172 days of hunger strike last year to demand his release from administrative detention. The Palestinian inmate ended his hunger strike after he was promised that his detention will not be renewed. He was supposed to be released last October. Hundreds of Palestinians are held in Israeli jails without charge or trial. The regime uses the administrative detention policy to imprison Palestinians indefinitely under the pretext that they planned to commit an offense. In other news, China and Brazil have struck a deal to conduct trade transactions in their national currencies, ditching the US dollar as an intermediary. The deal was announced by the Brazilian government. It enables the two countries to engage in direct trade and financial transactions using their own money. Brazil says the deal would reduce costs, promote greater bilateral trade, and facilitate investment. China is Brazil's biggest trading partner, with a record $150 billion in bilateral trade last year. The deal came after China and France agreed to conduct their first energy trade in the Chinese yuan. China has already reached similar currency deals with Russia, Pakistan, and several other countries. Iran, meanwhile, has also moved to de-dollarize its foreign trade transactions over the past couple of years. A new study shows nearly half of British workers are at risk of burnout due to emotional distress caused by the country's cost of living crisis. The report said work-related stress cost the British economy $34 billion last year. It's added that Britons took a total of 23.3 million sick days last year due to poor mental health. The study also revealed that the people in the UK are struggling with a negative state of mental health more than any other industrial nation. The country's unprecedented cost of living crisis was identified in the study as a key contributor to work-linked anxiety, as soaring inflation slashes the value of salaries. It added that almost half of Britons felt, quote, overwhelmed and uncertain about the future. Britain's main opposition Labour Party has barred its former leader Jeremy Corbyn from running as one of its candidates in the country's next parliamentary elections. A spokesman for Labour said the party's governing, that is, body, has approved a motion proposed by incumbent leader Keir Starmer not to endorse Corbyn. Opponents of the move have described Starmer's decision as a dark day for democracy. The UK's next election must be held by January 2025. Corbyn was suspended from Labour in 2020 for suggesting that complaints of anti-Semitism within the party during his leadership had been dramatically overstated for political reasons. His party membership was later reinstated, but Starmer refused to allow him to join the Parliamentary Labour Party. He currently sits as an independent lawmaker. We've asked former member of the British Parliament, Chris Williamson, about the Labour Party's move against Jeremy Corbyn. Here's what he had to say.
Well, it's hugely disrespectful. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn revitalised politics in the United Kingdom. He encouraged, inspired indeed, millions of people to get involved in politics for the first time. You know, people he engendered a sense of hope, I think, within the population at large. The policy agenda that Jeremy Corbyn was putting forward was hugely popular. The fact that he breathed new life into the political process in Britain was something, frankly, that should have been celebrated. But of course, this frightened the establishment, because we had somebody in Jeremy Corbyn who was a very clear socialist, who was somebody who was an anti-imperialist, who was a very strong pro-Palestinian campaigner and a critic of the apartheid regime.
Turning to France now, where violent clashes have erupted between police and protesters angry at President Emmanuel Macron's controversial pension reform plan, which bypasses democratic norms. Despite mass demonstrations and calls for an end to the pension bill, the French government has clearly shown it won't back off from the plan, even if it has to use violent tactics to repress its own people.
Hundreds of thousands of people across France took part in protests and strikes to voice their discontent with Emmanuel Macron's use of constitutional executive powers to push through an unpopular raise of the pension age. Dubbed the Day of Action by French trade unions, Tuesday's protest was the 10th such mobilization since industrial action started in mid-January against the proposed reform, which includes raising retirement age from 62 to 64. A record number of security forces were also deployed across France amid fears of protests turning violent.
Faced with this situation, I have decided to deploy an unprecedented security force of 13,000 police officers and gendarmes, including 5,500 in Paris. 90 units of mobile forces will be deployed, a level of mobilization like never before.
As protesters staged generally peaceful marches across the country, violent clashes broke out in some areas, with security forces using indiscriminate force, including tear gas canisters and water cannons, to suppress protesters calling for Macron's ouster. The crisis has intensified due to controversy over policing tactics, with lawyers complaining about arbitrary arrests, injuries, and extreme use of force, fearing crowd control. Over 30 lawyers wrote an open letter to Le Monde on Monday, stating their great concern about what they called arbitrary arrests of hundreds of people. They accused the police of using the judicial system and arrests as a tactic to put people off protesting. Also on Saturday, Europe's leading human rights watchdog accused the French police of using excessive force against protesters. It said people angry at Macron's pension law had the right to protest peacefully and should have been protected from police brutality. Current protests are the most serious challenge to Macron since the Yellow Vest revolt 4 years ago. Polls show two-thirds of French people are against Macron's pension reform and the decision to push it through without a parliamentary vote.
On Tuesday, the French government rejected a new demand by unions to suspend and rethink the controversial pension bill. Paris said it would discuss other topics with the unions, but stands firm on pension reforms. It seems the government has not taken into account both the mass social mobilization and the rising tension in France.
Leaders called on the government to suspend the controversial pension bill, suggesting the use of outside mediators to reach a consensus and end the chaotic situation in the country. But the government turned down the idea, saying the cabinet is willing to discuss other policy changes, but not to review the pension bill.
They refuse mediation with us. They refuse to discuss pensions. And you want me to tell you what the compromise would be? There is no compromise for the moment. The compromise is that the government doesn't even want to discuss pensions with us, while for the 10th time we have a day of mobilization, which is extremely well attended.
We have a government which has decided not to listen to the voice of society and decided to ignore the problems of the French people. So we said to ourselves, what is our future in a society like this, with a government that despises the voice of the young people?
Nearly 2 weeks after Macron forced a new pension law through Parliament using a special provision, unions have vowed no let-up in mass protests to get the government to back down.
We are going to continue the mobilizations. Today we are fighting for it to be really withdrawn, for this reform to be withdrawn. So if we can't go towards a pause and towards a mediation to discuss this reform again, we will continue the mobilizations and we will wait for the Constitutional Council to give us reason.
Public frustration at the French president's reform plans have evolved into broader anti-Macron sentiment.
We still see today in the polls that the French remain determined and are very largely in the majority. And it's Emmanuel Macron today who is losing popularity and not the social movement.
The protest movement against the pension reform has turned into the biggest domestic crisis of Macron's second mandate, with his approval rating at just 30%. Macron says the bill will come into force by the end of the year, arguing that the changes are necessary to prevent the pension system from collapse. But opponents say the overhaul is extremely unfair.
And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Human rights advocates have warned French officials about the use of force against the anti-government protesters. They have warned that demonstrators and journalists were arbitrarily arrested and subjected to extreme tactics. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Euronews, hundreds of demonstrators have been taken into custody in France in the past week in response to major protests erupting all across the country against the government's pension reform. After the first spontaneous rally on March 16th, 292 people were taken into custody and presented to the public prosecutor's office to receive a caution, but only 9 protesters have been charged with actual offences. This means that almost 97% or 283 cases were closed without any follow-up or charges being pressed. French media even reported that two Austrian miners on a school trip ended up in police custody following protests on March 16th. The Austrian embassy intervened to have them released. Questions are now being raised about whether this police mass arrest tactic is being used simply to frustrate the protest movement. Lawyers, magistrates and politicians are denouncing the arbitrary police custody, seeing it, as in other protest movements in recent years, as a repression of the social movement. One of the main issues with the recent spate of protests and arrests is that police have not always been given clear reasons for the detention. Colin Bullion, a lawyer who assisted some demonstrators, explained that protesters had all sorts of profiles: students at the local university, doctors, homeless people, minors, trade unionists, teachers, people who had just come out of a conference and were rounded up. Protesters were then told by police that they were taken into custody for participation in a group with a view to preparing violence or concealing their faces, and remanded in custody for 24 to 48 hours, said the lawyer. She added that this practice is known as custody sanctions, where protesters had irregular files against them, which were empty in terms of proof of guilt. A group of lawyers, of which she is a member, intends to file a collective complaint against the police for arbitrary detention and obstruction of the freedom of demonstration. In a statement, the syndicate Dola Magister, SM, a union for judges, also denounced in the numerous police detentions, seeing them as a repression of the social movement. It is the first time that the French government has used the criminal law to dissuade demonstrators from demonstrating and exercising their freedom, said Raphael Kempt, a French lawyer specializing in judiciary repression methods. Several left-wing politicians have criticized arbitrary arrest by French police. Also, RT noted the French police have been criticized by the country's National Human Rights Commission over the handling of a recent nationwide wave of anti-government demonstrations. A statement by the French National Consultative Commission on Human Rights, CNCDH, issued claims peaceful protesters were herded into traps and summarily arrested during rallies against President Emmanuel Macron's decision to increase the national retirement age. Of the 292 protesters arrested on March 16th in Paris, only 9 were prosecuted, indicating an excessive use of police custody in order to stifle legitimate protest, the organization claimed. Two journalists, whom the CNCDH pointed out are not required to comply with police orders to disperse, were arrested at a protest the following day. Additionally, the organization noted that police used trap tactics to corral large groups of demonstrators in violation of a 2020 police reform bill. These tactics can result in innocent protesters being held in place by riot police for hours on end and are permitted by the European Court of Human Rights only in cases where there is a real risk of serious harm to persons or property. Increased police repression cannot be the appropriate response to the political and social problems the government is currently facing, the CNCDH report stated, adding, France's credibility on the international scene depends on it. Macron's government used executive privilege to pass a pension reform bill without a parliamentary vote on March 16th. The bill, which raises the retirement age in France from 62 to 64, had already been condemned by trade unions and opposition parties, and its passage triggered nationwide protests and riots. More than a million people took to the streets recently with rallies in Paris, degenerating into violence as riders hurled rocks and Molotov cocktails at officers. Police responded with tear gas and water cannons, and more than 450 people were arrested nationwide, most of them in the capital. Demonstrators lit more than 900 fires on the streets, and 441 police officers were injured. Interior Minister Gérald Darmanin said recently.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear listeners, and condolences to you all. Since today, the 7th of the month of Ramadan, is a day when Abu Talib, the primordial Muslim and defender of Islam and Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, left this mortal world. Here is a statement worth pondering upon from his bereaved nephew, the Almighty's last messenger. The Quraysh could not raise a hand against me until my uncle, Abu Talib, died.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
addresses A to Z. An introduction to an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, obedience to parents. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's blessing and peace be upon Muhammad and his pure immaculate family. Hello dear brothers and sisters, I'm Farhad, your host. You're listening to A to Z on Islamic lifestyle. We are here to talk about moral conditions of acceptance of our fasting and our worship in this great month of Ramadan. As promised, today we are going to talk about one of the most important conditions for the acceptance of our good deeds in general, and more especially our worship in Ramadan month. We know this great month is the month of refraining from sins, is the month of refraining from evil acts. So we are here to practice how to refrain from Allah's prohibitions. So let's go back to our topic. Obtaining the consent of parents is the key that opens every door that is closed on us and a safe path through every difficulties we face in our life. So we are here to talk about a treasure, a golden key. So being nice with our parents, showing respect to them and obey them and fulfill their needs before they ask is the least we can do to compassionate them for their efforts, for the giving us growth, for the nurturing us. But in contrast, disobeying them is the key of opening any misfortune towards our souls. It is so great that it is mentioned along with shirk. So in our traditions, in Quran and in our belief, disobeying parents is mentioned along with shirk, polytheism, and it shows the gravity of the sin. It shows the severeness of the sins. And such a person who disobeys his parents or her parents will become Aqul Walidain, which is a very, very, very severe condition, very severe circumstance. And we are here to learn how to stay from this great sin together. Thank you for staying with us.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back, dear brothers and sisters. You're listening to A to Z on Islamic Lifestyle. I'm Farhad, your host, and we're going to talk about how to stay from the sin of disobeying our parents. So in the previous part, we talked about the importance of obeying our parents and respecting them, and the badness of disobeying them and insulting them. Allama Majlisi writes in his commentary on Al-Kafi, which is a very great book, Aqal Walidain means, so he's going to describe us the meaning of this condition, the meaning of Aqal Walidain. He says in the meaning of this word that it means the son or the daughter cause disrespect to parents by speech or action. So I repeat it again, we have to bear in our mind that Aqal Walidain, the severe condition, the severe unfortune, means that a son or a daughter cause disrespect to parents by speech or action, or they do not obey them in matters which are within reason, in matters which are not in any way against religion. So this is our duty, to obey them in this manner. Aqal Walidain is absolutely haram. The books of traditions of both Shia as well as the Sunnis validate this fact. So we're going to study together the examples of Aqal Walidain. So what kind of action will lead us to be Aqal Walidain? Inshallah not. So for example, here are some examples. It is mentioned in our traditions that looking at parents with anger is aq, to cause unhappiness to them, result in aq. It is haram to take any step which one is sure will displease the parents. So it's very important to control our manner, to control our anger towards them. Our parents are the most valuable treasure we can ever have. So we need to safeguard this treasure and be careful about them. May God give us the tawfiq of serving our parents. Thank you for being with us, and I wish you the best in this great month, month of Ramadan.
Forgive me for everything I've done in the past, when everything was going so fast, and now I just can't go on.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir. Our email is english@irib.ir.
But I know that you are really loving, you are really caring. I can't realize, but you know that I will be better, that I will be stronger if you are by my side. Allah.
Iranian Theater.
Part 1.
Theatre is no longer considered mere entertainment, but rather through certain entanglements with people it has evolved into a certain social insight and wisdom. In fact, our cultural development today goes hand in hand with the growth of our theatre.
Nowadays, Iranians show a lot of appreciation for theatre. Once rather quiet, theatre halls are now running out of tickets as enthusiastic crowds flock to see productions with various themes and genres that cater to various tastes. Theatrical performances have been part of Iran's social and religious events for hundreds of thousands of years. However, traditional performances are very different from the theatre of today.
The history of theatre in Iran goes back to a little more than a century ago. We can say that theatre became popular in Iran from the early 20th century.
By convenience, the constitutional revolution period is considered to be the beginning of theatre in Iran. But in my opinion, this was only when theatre took a very formal format here and plays got written and translated for the first time.
The first plays, which were written in Iran, were heavily inspired by the European melodrama and even the Russian plays. The first Iranian playwrights, such as Akhundzadeh and Mirza Agha Tabrizi, were quite influenced by the Russian melodrama.
Well, before having theatre in its modern form in Iran, we used to have theatre here in a traditional sense. Then the king of Iran, Nasiruddin Shah, travels to Europe and watches a play in England, and upon arrival decides to build something similar to that theatre hall. Had we not had any background in traditional theatre, we would have had to begin from scratch. However, Nasiruddin Shah built the immense theatre hall of Tekiye-Dowlat quickly, and thus created such glory for our passion plays that had never been seen before in history.
Our Taziye, or passion play, is a compilation of all theatre skills in our land.
Traditional passion play, or ta'aziyya, differentiates us among all other Muslim countries. We don't see such a play that has all elements of traditional theatre in it anywhere else.
The story is about a man who's been raised by a ruthless slaughterer. He has learned nothing but butchery. Then the father dies and the son gets to know a wider world. In this wider, more open world, yet again he's asked by people to slaughter, and thus he becomes a slaughterer, and that's all he knows. And that's the only way for him to get close to people. So he becomes a full-blown butcher. When a teacher enters the village, she brings with herself the scent of culture, dignity, and the Honorable Orient, and proposes that he become the school janitor. He asks how. She says that he should get married. When he wants to get married, he cannot find a wife because he sheds blood. It is then that he rises up and, with the help of the teacher, he moves towards the dignity that I mentioned.
Pioneers produced original plays to attract Iranian audiences. In doing so, they wrote plays based on historical events and old Persian literature, using both poetry such as Shahnameh and Layli and Majnun, and prose like 1001 Nights.
Iran is a country with ancient history, and it's a land with ancient mythologies. Long before the entrance of the Western theatre, we had had traditional theatre in Iran. In fact, we had had hundreds and even thousands of years of tradition in the traditional performing arts. Thus, some of our playwrights have tried to make use of those traditional elements in their contemporary plays.
This year, we worked on Layli and Majnun, and it took us months just to make the puppets and the stage. The music is composed by Ozir Hajibayev, the famous Azeri musician who has pioneered in Asia's opera. He gave birth to Azeri opera with praiseworthy ingenuity and creativity. Stringed puppet opera is available in two other countries. One is in Austria and the other is in the Czech Republic. But the difference between them and the work I'm doing is that in both countries, it is not considered an independent art form for itself, and usually they don't have a director and only have a puppet maker.
I have to say that after the revolution, a younger and a more dynamic generation of playwrights entered the scene, who are themselves now among the seasoned contemporary playwrights of Iran.
I thought at this particular time it was necessary to work on Socrates more than any other subjects or stories. It's because I feel that the economic situations, both in our society and many others, have forced people to stare away from books and galleries.
Galeri-ha
Socrates' most significant statement was always a sentence, "Know thyself." It means that he was engaged specifically with dialectic, dialogue, and thinking. In my opinion, the spirit of dialogue and dialectic is missing today, which has caused us conflicts, wars, and splits between governments and people, and also splits between nations in the world. And dialogue can make us close to each other.
Numerous productions called for more theatre venues. Therefore, many were built in different cities, which showed performing arts were making their mark on Iran.
I should mention that in the past 10 years or so, the number of theatre halls has increased significantly.
Although there are theatres all over Iran, Tehran became the heart of contemporary theatre. The juxtaposition of old theatres like Sangalach Theatre, established in 1965, and new venues like Iran Shah Theatre, founded in 2009, offers a variety of styles and functions.
Basically, what we call the boom in the theatre has happened in Tehran only, and the halls are generally located near the city centre, somewhere between Enghelab Square and Ferdowsi Square. Mawlavi Hall, Tehran City Theatre, Vahdat Theatre, Hafez Theatre and Iran Shahr Theatre are to name a few major theatre halls of Tehran.
If I am to mention another truly noticeable aspect of our theatre in Iran, I should indicate the growth we have witnessed in the academic aspect in the past 35 years. Before the Islamic Revolution, we only had two theatre faculties in our universities. This number has increased by manifolds in the past 35 years, and numerous students study directing, acting, dramatic literature, playwriting, stage designing, and puppet theatre, and each year we have an increasing number of graduates.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
Serbian health minister has warned that NATO carried out inhumane experiment in the Balkans. The US-led military bloc bombed Serbia with toxic depleted uranium, which Britain now wants to give to Ukraine. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of RT noted NATO's use of depleted uranium munitions in its air war against Yugoslavia was a horrible and inhumane experiment against the entire region. Serbian Health Minister Danica Grujicic has said contamination from these munitions led to a surge in cancer, autoimmune disease, and infertility, he added. NATO used 10 metric tons of depleted uranium, which is used to make the hardened cores of armor-piercing projectiles during its 1999 air campaign against Yugoslavia, the bloc admitted in a report a year afterwards. Although the report stated that depleted uranium poses practically no danger when ingested or absorbed through wounds. Evidence from Serbia suggests otherwise. Radiation exists at that moment when the explosion occurs, and after that, the nanoparticles do the work, he told Serbia's RTS television network recently. These particles enter your lungs, digestive tract, kidneys, and then you can expect at any moment that one alpha particle, which is 50 times more carcinogenic than any other, will come out of one atom of depleted uranium in your body and turn a normal cell into a malignant one. Serbian health minister said that Serbian physicians began noticing a surge in leukemia and lymphoma cases 7 years after the bombing campaign and have since recorded increases in oncological diseases, pathological pregnancies, autoimmune diseases, mental disorders in children, and infertility in men. The Serbian health minister said it was an ugly and inhuman experiment on the entire region, not only Serbia and Montenegro. I hope that the international scientific community will understand that it should be investigated in a scientific way and that weapons with depleted uranium will be banned. The Serbian minister has long called for an international inquiry into NATO's use of depleted uranium. The former neurosurgeon told local media in 2016, pointing out that 5,500 out of every 100,000 Serbs suffer from some kind of carcinoma, a rate nearly three times the global average. It is essential that the citizens of Serbia know how much and what kind of damage they suffered. The UK earlier announced that it plans to supply Ukraine with depleted uranium shells for use with British-provided Challenger 2 battle tanks. The Russian Defense Ministry warned that these shells would cause irreparable harm to soldiers and civilians alike. According to Al Jazeera English, the British government has announced it will provide Ukraine with armor-piercing rounds containing depleted uranium, a byproduct of the uranium enrichment process needed to create nuclear weapons. The rounds retain some radioactive properties, but they cannot generate a nuclear reaction like a nuclear weapon would. Erward Jaist, a nuclear expert at research organization RAND, says, but the ammunition does carry risk, even if it is not a nuclear weapon. Depleted uranium is a byproduct of the process to create the rarer enriched uranium used in nuclear fuel and weapons. Although far less powerful than enriched uranium and incapable of generating a nuclear reaction, depleted uranium is extremely dense, more dense than lead, a quality that makes it highly attractive as a projectile. Jade said, it's so dense and it's got so much momentum that it just keeps going through the armor and it heats it up so much that it catches on fire. RAND senior defense analyst Scott Boston said, when fired, a depleted uranium munition becomes essentially an exotic metal dart fired at an extraordinarily high speed. In 1970s, the U.S. Army began making armor-piercing rounds with depleted uranium and has since added it to composite tank armor to strengthen it. It has also added depleted uranium to the munitions fired by the Air Force A-10 close air support attack plane known as the Tank Killer. The British have lost their bearings, said Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, warning the munitions are a step toward accelerating escalation. Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu said the announcement was another step and there isn't so many of them left. The United Nations Environment Programme has described such ammunition as chemically and radiologically toxic heavy metal. While depleted uranium munitions are not considered nuclear weapons, their emission of low levels of radiation has led the UN nuclear watchdog to urge caution when handling and warn of the possible dangers of exposure. The handling of such ammunition should be kept to a minimum and protective apparel should be worn. The International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, cautions, adding a public information campaign may therefore be required to ensure that people avoid handling the projectiles. This should form part of any risk assessment, and such precautions should depend on the scope and number of ammunitions used in an area. The IAEA notes that depleted uranium is mainly a toxic chemical as opposed to a radiation hazard. Particles in aerosols can be inhaled or ingested, and while most would be exerted again, some can enter the bloodstream and cause kidney damage. The IAEA says high concentrations in the kidney can cause damage and, in extreme cases, renal failure.
Our brothers.
Part 1.
I'm one of the Omidvar brothers. My name is Isa Omidvar. My brother Abdullah is now living in Chile. For 10 years, we traveled around the globe to study various primitive societies and places off the beaten track. Our desire to travel had roots in our childhood. Our family was made up of 4 brothers and 2 sisters. Our mother loved traveling. We would go on long journeys when we were still little children. At that time, going to cities like Qom or Mashhad was considered long journeys. We used to attend Iqbal High School here. It was right here. It must be here. You know, people live with their memories, especially with the memories of their own town. I joined the climbing organization when I was in my early teens. Along with my friends, I would discover all big caves in the country. Inside these caves, we would find things that belong to the past, things like swords, oil lamps, and so on and so forth. Now they are all kept at the museum. Things like skulls. Things like these kept us motivated. So little by little, we developed a desire to know more about primitive people and their lives. We wanted to go to their lands, meet them face to face, and study their lives more seriously. As 2 teenage boys, Abdullah and I decided to travel with Iranian nomadic tribes to get more experience. We also wrote for many Iranian journals. So after 3 years of studying and exploring, we finally got prepared for our longest journey. In 1954, we imported two motorbikes from the UK. به وسیله دو تا موتورسیکلت که از انگلستان وارد کردیم ما اینها رو باز کردیم و خیلی تغییراتی هم درش دادیم ساکای بزرگی We put big sacks on them and installed a big reserve gas tank in the back of one of them. We put all our equipment in the sacks.
ما وسایلمون تجهیزاتمون داخل این توبره ها میذاشتیم و اینا و خیلی مجهز شد موتورسیکلت ها برای یه
The motorbikes were not for racing, though. They were to accompany us in a long odyssey.